If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and it is Royal Rumble Fallout Week, and I'm joined with who better to unpack all of the information, the analysis, the surprises, the controversies with Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you today?
I'm feeling really great, Kenny. I want everyone to know that I went up to Glasgow, did not overdo it, woke up each day, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to take on the world. I've never felt better in all my 50 years on Earth and can't wait to unpack this thing. Kenny, on the other hand, may have slightly overdone it on Saturday night. throwing him under the bus here, but I think you might have overdone it a little bit, Kenny.
I think I did. I mean, so full disclosure, Saturday night, went down to the pub with Finn and his lovely other half and my mum and her boyfriend and some friends. And we had a really good night, didn't we? We sat in the pub, we were drinking, we had a good time.
We absolutely did.
I, however, went
and
home.
Then somebody decided to start doing shots. Wasn't me, I didn't touch him, but somebody else did.
Wasn't my finest decision. But then the thing is, you don't even know this part. So my Steve Gunn, my other half, he surprised me by coming up a day early, so he was there for that. And I ended up going back to my flat with him and my mum and her boyfriend. And then a few other people came back, and I was unaware of this, but apparently, and there's video footage of this, that I thought it was a good idea to straddle Steve Gunn in front of my mother. And my mother filmed this to embarrass me and show me. There were people dancing, and apparently about 1:30 in the morning, I said, "Guys, I've had enough, I'm away to bed." And I just left the party in full swing and went to bed. And my mum had to come in and say, "Well, if you're chucking me out, you phone me a taxi first." So I had to phone her a taxi, and I woke up feeling very worse for wear on Saturday. And I would say that I woke up at 10 a.m. Sunday morning, and it took me till about 7:45 p.m. that night to feel okay again. So I was rough, very rough, but not so rough that I couldn't get to the Royal Rumble and enjoy it. So by the time you came around the next night, Finn, at 10 o'clock, I was okay again. I'd recovered, even if I do have a slight alcohol problem.
That's it. In fact, you were hitting the vodka, weren't you? When I walked in, you were there having your first one of the evening. So, we all stayed up. There's lots of people there. Stayed up until, I think it was about 4:15 it finished. Something like that. Maybe 4:10, 4:15.
Yeah.
We all went the distance. There was so much energy in the room, which I think was needed at various points during the Royal Rumble to keep us all awake.
Yes.
But hey, that show ended on a high note, didn't it? As we will discuss momentarily, I'm sure. But Sunday night, I was got around there for about 10 p.m. The kickoff had just sort of underway at that point. And it was a long show, wasn't it? So you're talking about a 6-hour show, including the kickoff. I mean, doesn't bode well for WrestleMania, does it, Kenny?
No, it does not. One of my favorite lines that you said, Finn, was about 11:59 p.m. And the one person, I mean, you could probably work it out if you're smart enough that you know who our crew are, but we actually had a WWE contracted wrestler at the party who will not name by name, but you could probably guess who it would be. And my favorite interaction of the night was at like 11:59 p.m. The pay-per-view is about to start at midnight, and Finn just turns to said wrestler and went, "Two fucking hours that was. Don't feel like I learnt a thing." And said person just kind of along going, yeah, okay, I get that. And it was just so good. Listen, Finn.
I mean,
what a kickoff.
I mean, look, Exactly. I mean, at least there's lots of people in the room to keep everyone else entertained. I mean, because the kickoff wasn't doing a very good job.
It was a 2 hour. I mean, that, because the thing is, all joking aside, you could do a 1 hour kickoff show, right? Fairly easily, still fit in the two matches that they had. Because the rest of it, there wasn't really anything else on it. They had the little R-Truth segment of him kind of joking around about being in the Royal Rumble with the two matches. You could do that in an hour, no problem. I just don't see why they needed two.
Absolutely, and for so much of that kickoff show, certainly the first hour, in fact, more than the first hour, I think, you've got like a partially naked arena. Loads of empty seats there because the people who've spent big money on tickets are smart enough to know that the kickoff shows aren't worth going to. And that's, you know, the great irony, isn't it? It's like all these people who paid all this money. I mean, if this was a must-see, they would be there to witness it, wouldn't they? And they're not.
Because I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was the 2017 SummerSlam, where they had, it was in the Barclays Center, and there was a six-man tag with like the Miz and the B-team against the Hardys and somebody. It was something like that. And they had a two-hour pre-show. So say the pre-show was like 5 till 7, and they put like the Miz out there at like 5:20 p.m. and the arena was like empty. And I think he went on social media and was very annoyed about that. That he had to do it. And Sheamus actually was the first guy on this show, on the Royal Rumble kickoff show, taking on Shorty G, and somebody in the room, I can't remember who, it was Ollie, had just kind of went, imagine that like, you've worked so hard from stenosis and all this stuff to come back for the kickoff show of the Royal Rumble. And, you know, I think now, even, I'll say it now before the rest of the show, I think that you could have taken out Cesaro or Shinsuke Nakamura or Bobby Roode or Dolph Ziggler, and put Sheamus in that Royal Rumble. And I think if you put Sheamus in and had him, you know, go face-to-face with Brock Lesnar, I think that would have been a bit of a moment. And I think people would have popped for it. So I think they missed a trick there.
Oh, I agree. And in his match with Shorty G, went really long. And there wasn't that many people there to watch it. And there wasn't a huge amount of interest in it anyway. Why would there be? And yeah, that would have been, to me, a far more fitting reward for this guy who trained so hard to come back and still in amazing shape. I think he's, what is he, like 42 now, Sheamus? I think he is
42, or nearly 40,
yeah, 42. I mean, he looks tremendous for his age. And he's like, yeah, a lot of people thought his career was over last year. He's come back, looks terrific. Why not put him in there? He's a big guy. He's somebody that could have had a good little exchange there with Brock Lesnar if they decided to, you know, give Sheamus a little bit more time. And it would have done something for Brock and would have, you know, enhanced Sheamus as well. And really the match with Shorty G didn't, and it did nothing for Shorty G, and it's a real shame for him. He had that tremendous series with Corbin last year, and look where he is now, losing on the kickoff with this dead end gimmick.
Yeah, the Shorty G Sheamus match didn't really click. You know, I do like the idea of Sheamus being the big bad bully and stuff, but it just didn't click, and it was on the kickoff. I mean, Sheamus did get the win, probably the right decision. I don't know where Sheamus fits in for WrestleMania. I mean, I guess you'd assume maybe some sort of mid-card multi-man match, you know, maybe like an IC title, something, but he doesn't feel like he's on. I didn't get the sense from the Royal Rumble that he is being positioned in a top program at WrestleMania.
No, agreed.
So then we got on the kickoff show, Andrade against Humberto Carrillo. Andrade got the win. Again, this match didn't really click for me too much. I mean, the big story now, actually, which we'll kind of get into in Raw, is that Andrade has been suspended for a month due to a wellness violation. They didn't know at this point, but what did you get the match with Andrade and Humberto and the decision to keep the belt on Andrade?
Well, I mean, at that point, it was absolutely the correct decision, and still is. I mean, as far as we know, I mean, on Raw, it was a DQ finish, so he's still the champion. So I don't know whether they're going to strip him of the belt. It doesn't look like it because it appears that they've done the injury angle with Carrillo and Andrade to explain his absence over the next 4 weeks. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. It was the right decision to leave the belt on Andrade. He defeated Rey Mysterio. They had the big gimmick ladder match. You know, it was a huge push. I mean, the timing of the suspension, I mean, it isn't. Obviously, it's not ideal, but he'll still be back for WrestleMania. He can still play a large role in that show if they're willing to allow him to have a large role in the show after he's been suspended for 30 days. I mean, it didn't seem to have affected Robert Roode much, the suspension. So maybe Andrade will be okay. But yeah, it was the right decision. I mean, Humberto is a I think he's a real talent. He's got a lot of talent, but I still think there's things he needs to learn how to do. He's not really connecting with the audiences, although he's trying harder, I've got to say. He doesn't really strike me as somebody who's got a tremendous amount of personality, but I can understand why WWE is pushing him. You know, because of his heritage, he's a good-looking kid. He can do a lot of things in the ring, but I don't think he's the complete package yet to become the star that they perhaps envisage he can be. But I do understand why WWE is giving him this chance. He's the sort of person that WWE would push. It's kind of, you look at Sammy Guevara over in AEW. You'd think if those two were working for the same company, they could have a tremendous feud. Those two could.
Yeah.
And Guevara's obviously got loads more personality than Carrillo. You know, maybe WWE sees him as their version of Sammy. Yeah, I mean, it was a good result for Carrillo on Raw. So he's going to get the credit for sidelining Andrade for a month. But in terms of Royal Rumble, yeah, absolutely the right decision. Again, the match didn't really hold my attention either.
I think what we'll do is we'll kind of jump back and forth now and then when it suits. And I think for this point, yes, we can talk about Humberto and Andrade from Raw. I do think that Humberto, he's not really been kind of clicking that much for people. But I do think that kind of the Andrade suspension, where they wrote him out by having Humberto do the DDT on the concrete on the outside, that actually gave Humberto a little bit of an edge, which he didn't have before. So maybe the silver lining of the cloud is that, you know, even though Andrade's out for a month, that Humberto did get to look a bit like a badass, which he hasn't really felt like before. So hopefully that kind of helps him in spite of the kind of situation that they're in with Andrade.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I mean, he definitely needs more depth to his character, and you know, this like tougher side to him, and somebody who's, you know, I think it was the 16th, December 16th Raw that Andrade had nailed Carrillo with the Hammerlock DDT on the concrete. So it was like role reversal, what goes around comes around, and all that. And so it really felt like, yes, you know, justice for Carrillo. You know, he's settled the score there, and Andrade deserved it. So, yeah, I think this is definitely an enhancement for him, an enhancer for his character and for his status in the company.
I do want to mention, you did bring up Sammy Guevara very quickly. Sammy Guevara was, I don't know if you saw these photos, Finn. Sammy Guevara was outside in a sort of toy tank, like a miniature toy tank outside Minute Maid Park, basically doing like a knockoff of the DX invasion. I thought it was really funny and really clever, especially for like the kind of Instagram, Twitter generation. I thought that was a really funny sort of mock-up.
Yeah, definitely. And just all a bit of harmless fun. I'm sure lots of people got wound up by it, but it's, you know, it's just, he's just having a laugh out there, and, you know, good for him for getting some publicity for himself. And for AEW, I'm sure a lot of people who don't normally watch AEW or may never watch it at all will now be aware of who this person is. So I think he's really upped his profile, you know, by doing something like this, which, you know, which to me is in good fun. You know, it's to me, it's just, he's having a laugh. Okay, he's poking fun at WWE's expense, but you take it back to 1998. And WWF did this to WCW. They were poking fun at their expense. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's, to me, that's all completely fine. So good for him for getting himself over by doing something like this, which in the social media age has greatly increased his profile and his notice to people, as I said, who otherwise may not have known who he was.
And I do think that Sammy Guevara, actually, you know, when we get to like this coming May, that'll be a year since Double or Nothing, I guess, and he had that match in the pre-show with Kip Sabian, and I think he is one of the people in that 12-month period who we can look back and say, look at how much his profile has raised, because he was just kind of a generic guy, and then I think, you know, the Inner Circle stuff, the personality he's got on TV, you know, his catchphrase of hit me up to sort of every hot woman that he's trying to get to sleep with him, and now the toy tank. Like, he's just done a really good job of sort of using the platform that he's got to, you know, to just get get his profile up.
Definitely. I think it's something that Triple H would probably be amused by as well. And I think there would be some people in WWE that would be irritated by it. But I think a lot of others would say, you know, good on him for getting himself over by doing this, by coming up with something inventive. And even though it's obviously doing what DX had done back in 98, but still, there's still some wit and imagination went into this. So I think this will serve him well in the long run. And I can imagine that WWE, when the time comes, may be interested in him.
So let's get into the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Again, we'll probably jump back and forth between Raw stuff as well, just because it makes more sense to do it that way than, you know, not mention stuff. We opened the show with a big Steve Austin promo, where obviously him being a big Royal Rumble winner, they wanted to try and kind of put over the gravitas of the Royal Rumble match. I thought that was a good little kind of nugget to get people feeling like they're watching a big event.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's the only three-time winner, right, Kenny? So, yeah. I mean, he's still somebody that's, to this day, I mean, when we saw him last year in WWE, still gets those huge responses, still commands tremendous respect from long-time fans and new fans, so you can't go wrong with Steve Austin. You just can't.
Yeah, and I think Austin's, the 97 Royal Rumble win does still stand for Austin, doesn't it? Even though he like cheated to win it, that does still stand. So he won 97, 98 and 01, right? That's the three.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in the highlights package that they run, they stated there that Steve Austin is the only three-time winner. I'm sure that is correct. I'm sure it is.
Okay, so we opened this show. What do you think about the idea of WWE doing the Royal Rumbles, I guess, now every year in a baseball stadium? Do you like the aesthetic of a baseball stadium? Do you like they're putting it in a bigger space than just an arena? Like, how do you feel about that compared to, you know, them used to doing it in just regular arenas?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think they would have done that previously if they could have sold the tickets. So, I mean, it's great because it bumps the gate up. It makes it distinguishes it from the other regular shows, makes it seem bigger, and looks great on TV, enables them to do the things that they did in the Falls Count Anywhere match between Roman Reigns and King Corbin. So it gives them scope for a lot to be a lot more adventurous with the big gimmick matches, as we saw in the match that we're just about to review. I'm a big fan of it. It's something that I'm sure they would have done many times. I don't know why they didn't really do more of this in the Attitude Era, come to think of it. Now I mention it, you go back to like 98 and into 99, when every pay-per-view was selling out. You do wonder why they didn't play larger venues more often, don't you, Kenny? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, no, because they finally went to a bigger venue for WrestleMania 17. But yeah, I mean, like 99-2000, you would imagine that they could have went bigger. And I think one of the WrestleManias that always feels just too small is WrestleMania 2000, especially given that the company was doing so well. So yeah, I mean, the Royal Rumble in some ways is like the companion piece to WrestleMania. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people actually feel that the Rumble is their favourite pay-per-view of the year over WrestleMania. That's the one that people look forward to the most. And you've got the surprises, you've got the, you know, the entrance and stuff. So I think that it's definitely a good choice to do it. I'm torn with it. I mean, I maybe would like a bit of more of a set than what they've got. But on the whole, I do like it being a bigger place. And because this is now the second year they've done it, right? No, they started in 2017... And it was San Antonio, right? The Alamo Dome or something. I'm sure they went somewhere big for 2017. And
they did that for the 97 Rumble, didn't they?
Yeah, and then they went back for 2017. And then 2018 was in an arena. And then 2019 was when they started the baseball stadiums.
Oh, because I think that was when all the rumours started, didn't they, about the Shawn Michaels and AJ Styles match.
Yes.
They're happening. That rings a bell, doesn't it? And that was something... I believe AJ Styles did fuel that by a fan created like a match graphic, the Styles versus Shawn Michaels, and I believe Styles retweeted it. So people thought, oh, that maybe that will happen. And of course it didn't.
But God loves a trier. So we open the show with Roman Reigns taking on Baron Corbin, King Corbin in a Falls Count Anywhere match. This match went about 21, 22 minutes. Roman Reigns got the win in the end. Plenty of interference from Ziggler, Roode, and the Usos. What did you make of this match? The layout, the presentation, and the decision for Roman to go over in the end?
It was definitely the right decision for Reigns. Go over. I mean, I'm hoping that this has drawn a line under this feud. Surely it has. It felt like it just went on and on and on. We've said this before. I don't want to go on and on and on about how Ul's going on and on and on about it. I thought they made good use of the stadium setting. I mean, I was a bit concerned when they found the chemical toilets. And didn't Reigns shove Corbin in the toilet and he wheeled it off and sent flying? I was a bit concerned about what that might lead to. I was having flashbacks to that angle with Eric Bischoff in TNA. I don't know how many of you saw that. I think it actually was his last ever on-screen appearance for TNA. And he ended up in a chemical toilet. He got shoved over and, yeah, it wasn't. When Eric came out, wasn't a pretty sight. So I was having like visions, flashbacks to that happening. It didn't, thankfully. But yeah, I mean, it was an exciting match. I thought fans really did get into it. I thought all the add-ons worked, those extras, and it all made sense as well in the context of the feud. You know, you go back to SmackDown on Friday, which had the six-man match pitting the Usos and Roman Reigns versus Ziggler, Corbin and Robert Roode. And there was all sorts of stuff going on in that match. I thought that match actually was really well put together. Lots of different layers to it. And Jimmy Uso suffering the injury, then coming back out, channeling Terry Funk. And then he ended up scoring the pin, all action. So I thought it was a nice follow-on from that. I thought it was a really good way to end the feud, if indeed that is the end. I can't see them continuing Reigns versus Corbin after that match at the Rumble. That does feel like it had a ring of finality to it. Would you agree with me, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I would. I'm trying to figure out what the WWE pay-per-view schedule is for this. I mean, I know we've got the Saudi Arabia show on February 27, but I mean, I'm assuming it's the Elimination Chamber is going to be getting the Elimination Chamber again.
I think we have got a show. I think, is it the first or second Sunday in March? I believe it's about, I think it's 4 weeks before WrestleMania. I think there's a show.
Apparently March 8th is advertised to be Elimination Chamber in Philadelphia. Yeah. I don't know if that means that Fastlane, which would be in February, is gone and that's been replaced by the Saudi Arabia pay-per-view. Hopefully it is, because there's enough going on that you don't really need more. But my point was going to be, I think I could see them having a chamber to determine who faces Bray Wyatt, and Roman and Corbin can both be in it. But I think that's as far as you're going to get. But it's a shame, because I said this when I was talking to Sandra about it. Everything that they did was decent. I just wasn't interested in the storyline, you know? It's kind of been the it's been like, when I think of a SmackDown on a Friday night, I think of this bloody Roman Reigns Baron Corbin feud that's just, you know, sucking my soul. But in saying that, I think sometimes
Kenny, can I just stop you now? Had they added a stipulation to it which stated that the loser had to eat dog food, would you have been more or less interested?
I'd have flown to Houston, Finn. I'd have been there a lot. I'd want to smell the pedigree chum coming at me.
The feud was just dragged on. It just.
But I do want to say, because even though it didn't work for me, I do want to put it over from the sense of, like, even though I wasn't interested in the program, I think they laid it out fairly well. And I think that the interference and all that did add to it, and they did fun stuff. So I think that they did have a good match and that they laid it out as well as they could. It just wasn't for me. So
yeah, I mean, there was some great stunts, like one, I can't remember which Uso it was, leapt off like a tower onto, I think, with Ziggler and Roode, and the camera angle there was tremendous. I know the production took a real beating from a lot of viewers, but I mean, that was a great, you know, first class A1 camera shot there of I can't remember which user it was. I apologise. I was watching. I've only watched the show on the night. I'm actually doing the write-up for it for WrestleTalk magazine. I will be watching it again before I do my write-up. I've another chance to watch it again. So I apologise. I can't remember which user brother it was that did the crossbody off the top of the tower or whatever it was. And that looked amazing. So there's all these extras. And I think I said last week when we were talking about it that I hoped they would do like a big production on this match, and they did. So, you know, that's full marks. Congratulations to WWE for that. That gets my full endorsement.
There you go. So, yes, we opened the show with that, and then after that, we went straight into the Women's Royal Rumble. We did have some promo time with Sonya and Mandy, where Sonya was basically saying she'd chuck herself out for Mandy. Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe said if it came down to them, they would have to, you know, obviously after they chucked Rollins out, they'd have to be every man for himself. But the Women's Royal Rumble took place. A lot of NXT talent in the Women's Royal Rumble. Before we talk about who wins, because I know it's a whole different conversation, what did you make of the Rumble, the kind of the pacing of it, the way they did it, the surprises, all that? How did it work for you?
I thought it worked really well. I mean, there wasn't that many letdowns. I mean, Kelly was like, oh.
Ugh.
It's just, why is she back? And there was just this like collective groan in the room when she arrived. I mean, she was never any good. She just sort of really represented an era that most people would rather forget. She really did almost nothing in the match.
And what she did do is she did badly.
She what? Sorry.
What she did do in the match, she did badly.
Oh,
she
did not even, of course she did.
Didn't even execute it well.
Absolutely, she did. Yeah, I mean, that's just trademark Kelly. So that just seemed pointless. Wasn't much of a response to her. And kind of not surprising, really, based upon the reaction to her at the Rumble. But it was actually even worse on Raw when she turned up backstage with the Street Profits. It was just almost near silence when she arrived. And even when they pointed out who it was like, oh, we need to point out that it's Kelly, so she gets that big, you know, inflated artificial pop. And he didn't arrive then either. So, I mean, most of the surprises were welcomed. I don't think there was, I think one or two people in the room that weren't too keen on seeing Shotzi Blackheart in there. I didn't think she did very well when she made her NXT debut last month against Bianca Belair. She did not have a good night, but I do see why they've signed her. I saw quite a lot of her matches before she joined WWE, and some of them were really good. So I can kind of understand why she was given a chance. But yeah, it was really good to see so many NXT people in there. I thought Shayna Baszler, I thought she got a really good reaction. If you go back to Survivor Series, there was some disappointment expressed internally from WWE, and I know by Vince McMahon, and certainly from you and I, Kenny, at the quality and certainly the atmosphere drawn by the women's main event of Survivor Series, which Shayna was 1/3. So I thought she must have been very relieved when she came out and she got that star response. So obviously I would have preferred it if Ronda Rousey had come out, because she was my pick and she didn't even appear in the match. So that was a disappointment for me.
We've got to give a big shout out to one of the stars of the match, Bianca Belair. She did really well.
She did really well, absolutely. And Bianca's somebody who's, you know, tremendous athlete, as everyone knows, that should go without saying. But she's been someone that I've always, whenever I've watched her, I thought, does she really get pro wrestling? Does she really know what to do and when? And I think she showed, she certainly put a lot of my fears to rest there with a performance in the Rumble. I thought she was really good with her responses to things and gloating about her eliminations and just being in the right place at the right time, you know, most of the time. And actually, hold on a second. Was it Bianca who was involved in the Beth Phoenix thing? It wasn't it? Was it Bianca who nailed Beth?
Well, no, so because Beth was on the top rope, and then when Bianca hit Beth, and then she hit her head off the ring post, and that was what caused the bloody injury. Anyway, fair play to Beth for just going on like a trooper. Get Beth Phoenix back in the ring, ladies and gentlemen. Get her back. She is so good for how, you know, she's not been doing it for how many years. And anytime she comes back, she just seems to be very capable.
Definitely. She blends in nicely. She hasn't really aged at all. when you look at her, you know, certainly in the face, she just kind of looks the same as she did 10 years ago. And she always gets a good response as well. And I think just to clarify what I was saying about Bianca Belair, I think she like nailed Beth, and it was when Beth sold it rather than Bianca nailing it, hitting her too hard and causing Beth to swing her head back and hit the ring post. I think that was just a sell, and she was in control of herself and she just oversold it and hit her head on the ring post. But yeah, like a trooper, she carried on. And
Bianca's only been doing this for 4 years. I was kind of reading up on her, and she'd done like done a lot of kind of stuff in track and field, and she became like an All-American at, I think it was the University of Tennessee, and then she signed in 2016. So I think for the 4 years that she's been doing it, I think that she definitely, every time you see her, I mean main roster, because obviously people watch NXT, you see it all the time, but I think that she is getting better. She's continuously getting better. So, you know, even if there's little kind of nicks that she has to kind of get past, she is getting past them. And I mean, she's to me, when you look at NXT, she is one of the ones you go, she could main event at WrestleMania one day. She has got that potential on her.
Yeah, she's definitely improved enormously. If you think of a performance against, I think it was against Shayna, we got a takeover last year. And that was the one where Sam Roberts had like buried her. And then she had the match, and it was a huge disappointment. And she was doing all the athletic moves, and she's probably better athletically than anyone in the company. I mean, she can just do so much. But she just didn't have the psychology down and the timing, and just knowing what to do and when and how to react, and all the little things that make the difference between somebody who's kind of pretending to be a pro wrestler and somebody who is like an A1 top of the line worker who can get in there and make themselves look good and others shine others as well at the same time. And that's the true test, isn't it, of a pro wrestler, is that they can look good and all around shine also. Everyone in their orbit gets over from interacting with that wrestler. But she absolutely silenced the detractors with that performance there. And I think also just another point to make about Bianca, contrast her performance with Lacey Evans's performance at last year's Rumble. And they were kind of in the similar spot, weren't they? Because Lacey was in there and she went for, I think it was the best part of half an hour, and it was a disaster for her. It was absolutely dismal showing by Lacey, and she could see that she was totally in over her head. And Bianca, she was given this spot and she exceeded the expectations. She stepped up, she delivered. She was really good. I mean, it was redeemed herself totally for the Shayna match last year.
So we had a lot of kind of fun spots in the Women's Rumble match. We had a lot of people from NXT. We had Mighty Molly coming back, Mercedes Martinez's first Rumble. Liv Morgan got to put Lana out. Mandy Rose was saved by Otis in a very kind of comedic way, with Otis sort of planking on the ground so she could just sort of lay on him or stand on him till she got back in.
Naomi got to do the athletic spots where we thought she was eliminated, and then she avoided elimination by hanging onto the barrier and then got onto the announcer's table and used part of the announcer, like the top of the announcer table as a bridge to get back into the ring. So she was the only one actually in either Rumble who had those spots. You would have thought John Morrison, who's only just returned, they would allow him to come up with something new. And certainly that was a Kofi trademark, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And either of those two were allowed to do that. It was just Naomi who shone in that role at the Royal Rumble.
And then we got I actually wanted to ask you this, because I've seen people on either side of the fence. How do you feel about Naomi as a performer? Is Naomi somebody who you think deserves to get some more time to see what she can do? Do you think that she's kind of past the idea of being a big star who can sort of be in big matches? Like, where do you place Naomi?
Well, I mean, she was the first time I saw her was on the women's NXT season, which would have been 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Like that 2010, that was the first time I saw her. So she's been doing this over 10 years, I don't think she can go any further than this. I think she could be somebody who could be part of a tag team. I think she could be a women's tag team champion. And I think she could be valuable. She could be an asset to the company in that role. But I don't see her. Every time she's ever been champion or been pushed in singles, she's been a disappointment. I think she's somebody who can do certain things well, but she's not that complete package performer who could hold a women's title for a long time and be put in like the position that Becky Lynch was put in at Royal Rumble and go on second to last. She's just not up to that. She's not up to that task. Absolutely no way. But as a tag team performer, I think she could be a champion, and I think she could contribute a lot to WWE and to her legacy as a performer. I think she would be remembered more fondly if she were to do that. I'm not sure who she should team with, but I mean, there's plenty of people to choose from.
Yeah, I think with even Alexa Bliss, she feels better now in a team than she did as a singles, because in singles she's not really she's not quite on the level of like the horsewomen and stuff like that. So she fits better in a team. There's lots of people they could put in teams. We saw the reuniting of another team in this match with Beth Phoenix and Natalia, the Divas of Doom. We got Kelly Kelly, which obviously crushed my soul. I got Xia Li in the stakes again because it was a fucking fix. We had Tegan Knox coming in from NXT towards the end. We had Santina Marella at 29 for a comedy spot, and then number 30 was Shayna Baszler. So Shayna Baszler had been apparently, she was going to win the Royal Rumble up until about January the 14th or the 15th, which is apparently when the betting odds started to change. I don't look at the betting odds for the Royal Rumble, so I wouldn't be able to tell you that. But so the idea was that Shayna's going to be in a major program at WrestleMania, apparently against Becky Lynch. But the decision was made to change it and have Charlotte win the Royal Rumble. We all kind of thought Shayna Baszler was going to win, so there was a bit of a kind of deflation when Charlotte won. But Charlotte on Raw would go on to have a really good match with Asuka. The rumour mill is that, as of right now on the books, it's going to be Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's title at WrestleMania. But that could also be a red herring, and maybe we're going to get Charlotte and Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania to go against sort of Becky and Shayna for the other belt. Talk me through your thoughts on Charlotte getting the win, where you would like to see it go for WrestleMania, because I think the initial fear from people was, oh God, we're going to get Becky and Charlotte again. Don't think we are. But talk me through the idea of Charlotte going over and just where you kind of want to see it go.
I don't want to see Charlotte versus Becky. I don't think many people want to see that match. We've seen it endlessly, and it's not a WrestleMania caliber match in 2020, because we've already seen it numerous times. So Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte it's got the potential to be tremendous for Rhea, and also got the potential to be a big flop as well, when you think about it, because it's possible that a lot of WWE fans would be expecting more and would not see her on Charlotte's level, and would think, well, this just isn't good enough for WrestleMania. And I would actually be more inclined, if I was booking this, not to book Rhea Ripley in that spot, because I think she's somebody who can come in after WrestleMania or later in the year anyway, and somebody who can be built up slowly, kind of like what they should have done with Lacey Evans. In hindsight, it wouldn't have really worked with Lacey anyway, whether they brought her in and moved her up slowly instead of just pitting her against Becky Lynch. I think she was doomed anyway, as we now know all these months later. But I think Rhea is somebody who I don't know whether she's the total package yet, but she's not far off. And I think she's somebody who can be built into a serious title contender. But it would be far better to bring her in and just move her up the ranks slowly, rather than bringing her in and putting her in a match of that magnitude. Even though I think she would do well, because I think she's incredibly talented, I'm not sure how it would be received by the audience. That's my fear. And if she goes out there and the atmosphere is muted, then WWE bigwigs will look at that and say, we've made a mistake here. They're obviously not going to blame Charlotte. It would be Rhea's fault. So she would get the blame for the failure of the match, as in terms of the crowd heat and the atmosphere. So that could be devastating for her. Could be a huge setback. So I'd rather she weren't put in that position. And I'm hoping this is a red herring. This is a device to distract us from what's really going on. And I don't think people will be satisfied with anything other than Ronda Rousey coming back. And I think if Rousey does return for a big match at WrestleMania, then, you know, I think that's what people want. Certainly, that's what I want.
Ronda Rousey did actually tweet. Did you see the photo that she tweeted out after the match? Yeah. Very funny. Just kind of say, you thought I'd come back tonight. Talk to the listeners about how likely do you think it is that it could be a red herring? Like, do you think it is something where, like, I mean, if they were going to be bringing Ronda back, say, in March, to do something, are they going to want to try and keep it quiet? So, obviously, not wanting it to get out sort of internally that she's doing it. So, maybe this makes sense that it's a red herring?
I mean, possibly, yeah. I mean, if you remember when they brought her in 2 years ago, she was denying it. She was asked right on camera, wasn't she? I think she was just going to the airport and she was going to film that Mark Wahlberg movie. Was it that didn't do very well? I forget what it was called, but it was like an action movie that she did with Mark Wahlberg. And she was asked, I think it was by TMZ or one of the gossip sites, you know, are you going to WWE? And she sort of smiled and denied it. And she denied it right up until the show, and then she appeared because they wanted the surprise. So I think WWE, if it has struck a deal with her, it's all going to be a closely guarded secret and it's not going to be revealed until they're good and ready to do so. She's proven herself to be someone who can keep her mouth shut. So they know that they can trust her with this information and she's not going to spill and it shouldn't get out. But I've got a feeling, I think she is returning for a big match at WrestleMania. I'm convinced she is.
It's not going to be with MDLs. It's going to be. It would either be Becky or Charlotte. So
exactly. I'm convinced she is. As for the other match you asked me about, Shayna versus Becky Lynch, I think that does have a lot of potential. I mean, as I said, Shayna got a good response at the Royal Rumble. I thought she looked really strong before she was eliminated. I think she's moved up in the estimations of general WWE fans. I mean, I've been a big fan of hers for a long time, as people know. And I think she's absolutely up to the task, absolutely up to the challenge of having a good match with Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. And that would be an entirely new match. She scored the win, didn't she, at Survivor Series?
She made Bayley submit to her finish.
That's right. On Raw, Becky Lynch did like a braggadocious promo saying, I beat everyone, was I doing doubting myself? I must have been mad. I'm better than anyone. So, I mean, that does tie in well to the Shayna thing because Becky Lynch hasn't defeated Shayna, as we know, at least not in, she hasn't defeated her, in a major match. So she can come in and she could issue the challenge. Maybe she will be in the women's, if there's a women's elimination chamber match, maybe Shayna will be in that and she'll win that. And that'll entitle her to face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. Maybe that's how they'll do it. I do like that match. It's a new match as a singles match. I think it can be built up. I think that WWE can believe in that match and give them like 15, 16, 17 minutes and it will really deliver. But I would think that Becky Lynch would prefer to wrestle Ronda Rousey.
I know that there's been a lot of... a lot of people are frustrated about Charlotte winning the Royal Rumble, and just for my sort of take on it, I've always found Charlotte to be a fairly consistent performer. I think she's a very good performer, so it does not bother me. She's not my favourite wrestler, which is what some people think. She's not like I've got some sort of agenda for Charlotte Flair. But what I do think is worth bringing up is that she was initially supposed to win last year's Royal Rumble and go on to WrestleMania to face Ronda Rousey. That was the plan. Becky Lynch was going to be the Survivor Series match, champion versus champion, and then obviously when Nia Jax punched Becky, it kind of spiraled, and then we got Ronda and Charlotte at Survivor Series that year. To me, I could understand the frustration from people if Shayna was not getting the major program, but she is. She's going to be facing Becky, which is going to be a hot match, and then whether it's Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte or Ronda versus Charlotte, I think both of those are very good matches. Obviously, the Ronda one's much bigger box office, and that would do really well. But even like, because I think Bayley is the weakest horsewoman of all four of them. genuinely. And the reason for that is because if I look at, say, the other horsewomen, I go, okay, what are my favourite matches involving the horsewomen of recent memory? And with Becky, I really enjoyed the Royal Rumble match that she had. We're about to talk about with Asuka. Charlotte, I thought the match she had with Asuka last night on Raw was really, really fun. Really good match. Had me biting for the near falls. And Sasha had that brilliant Hell in a Cell match with Becky last year. But with Bayley, I can't remember the last one that I really liked. I can't. There's not, in my recent memory, one that's really there. So I feel like Bayley's the one kind of, you know, for WrestleMania, I just don't think Bayley as SmackDown Women's Champion is going to get on that show. And I think that, you know, the idea, it's either going to have to be, if they do go with Ronda and Charlotte, I don't know if they put the SmackDown belt on one of them somehow. Maybe that's, maybe there's an elimination chamber for the SmackDown Women's title and that's how they get to it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever it is. But I think that Bayley's just not working, you know, and I don't think that she is going to have a big place on WrestleMania. I would much rather see, in addition to Charlotte and Rhea or Charlotte and Ronda, I would also prefer Charlotte and Ronda, obviously, and hoping that's what the red herring is, and with Becky and Shayna. The other big women's match I want to see in that show is Asuka and Kairi defend those belts, because Asuka, in the last 48 hours, she's put in two brilliant performances at the Royal Rumble and on Raw, and I really hope that her and Kairi Sane are rewarded for that. And she was, you know, she wasn't jobbed out on Raw to Charlotte Flair, so Asuka did get something. So I'm just kind of hoping that we get something with the women's tag titles at WrestleMania as well, because to be honest, I just think that they're more deserving of the spot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing is as well, we're obviously looking forward to WrestleMania, looking ahead to WrestleMania, even though we've got two major shows in the interim. And it's like, I said at the beginning of this podcast, Raw Rumble was like 6 hours and it doesn't bode well for WrestleMania. And it doesn't. And if it's a non-essential match, like a Bayley title defense against whoever, Dan or Brooke or whatever, just don't book it. You know, just save that 12 minutes with the entrances and everything. Just cut that from the show. The show needs to be a lot shorter than it was last year. Everyone knows that. And some matches are expendable, and that is one of them. It does not need to take place. Not everyone needs to wrestle at WrestleMania.
And I think with Shayna and Charlotte, if they do have Becky and Shayna and Charlotte versus Rhea or Charlotte versus Ronda, they both feel like fresh matches. I know we got Charlotte and Ronda at Survivor Series 2018, but they still do feel fairly fresh and they feel big. You know, last year we had the triple threat match at WrestleMania, and then we ended up just kind of not getting. I mean, we got the women's tag for it, but we didn't get another, you know, big one-on-one match anywhere in WrestleMania. So the idea of having two of those appeals to me. So we had the women's Royal Rumble. Then from there, we had Bayley versus Lacey Evans for the SmackDown Women's Championship. The match went about 9 minutes. It wasn't a bad match. It wasn't, bad. It was just very average. And Bayley really needed to carry Lacey to a good match because Lacey's not at a level yet where she can sort of hold her full 50% in a match. And I just don't think that it was, I think it was just very basic. So we in the room, I noticed it was probably the match that we most just all chatted and didn't really get involved in. But what did you make of it?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, they had an angle on SmackDown that wasn't very well received, where Lacey was out there, you know, talking about her father's addiction, and her voice was breaking. It was clearly very emotional for her. And she was saying she wants to inspire people and set an example. And she was even receiving light boos. And I was kind of disappointed by the response from the audience. But I think this is partly what has been said previously about Lacey, is that this character is not a babyface character. She's trying to be likable, and she just does not come across as a likable character. And then we've got Bayley, which we've talked about endlessly, how this character is just not riveting. it's Maureen from Accounts, isn't it? I mean, it's been said endlessly, hasn't it, all this?
So that we are being devil's advocates here, right? Because I know I don't... What do you... I mean, there are some people who still think Bayley is good and that we give it a hard time. What would you say to that?
Well, she has proven herself in the past to be a really good in-ring performer. There's no doubt about that. I put her over when she was in TakeOver. When she was NXT. She had a lot of really good TakeOver matches. She was famously the only person to ever have a presentable match with Eva Marie. I mean, that's...
Oh, God, like, remember that? Wow.
It's almost like Taka Michinoku and Gangrel. You know, it's like that running joke. And as an in-ring performer, I think she's really competent. She's really smooth. Everything she does looks really good. She almost never screws anything up. She's really capable. And you can see that she's someone who knows how to work with green opponents by leading them, but not making it obvious that she is. So as an in-ring performer, I think she's very professional. I think she's one of the better female performers in WWE. But the character is such a flop. And that is, it's a character-driven business. I apologize if this is all a case of stating the obvious. And I'm one person in the past who has many times blasted people for stating the obvious. So, you know, Finley's being a hypocrite. I apologize for that. But this character is just death. She's just not villainous enough. And in this SmackDown segment, Lacey was out there pouring her heart out. Fans weren't interested. And then Bayley attacked her from behind and started nailing her, beating her down. And people just weren't really that interested. And then later on, we had another brawl backstage, which was very welcome by this is on SmackDown, by the way, which was very welcome, by the way, because Dana Brooke was doing one of the most robotic promos she's ever done. And suddenly it was interrupted by this skirmish between Lacey and Bayley. It's like, hurrah, you know, we don't have to listen to Dana talk anymore. But again, you know, this marriage between Lacey and Bayley didn't click at all because the characters are just, they're all a sort of miscast. They're ill-suited for these characters. Lacey's not an effective babyface. And Bayley, and even though we were saying she's banging on about this for months and months and months, she's got to turn heel. She's not good at being a heel. We now know this. And that doesn't mean that WWE was wrong to try this, because many times in wrestling, as in life, you have to try things, and sometimes it's only when you actually try it that you realize that it was actually not a good idea. But until you've tried it, you sometimes don't know. And I'm not sure if Bayley ever can be an effective heel, because she just hasn't shown that sort of that passion and that commitment and that energy for it. Maybe she's doing the best she can, but it's just not convincing to me. And I know it's not convincing to you, Kenny.
No, it's not. And I feel bad saying it, because I was talking to Sandra about it on Patreon. Quick plug, patreon.com/insidetheropes. And the thing that Sandra was saying, Bayley was Sandra's favourite wrestler for years. And I think for her especially, it's kind of very kind of gutting to you know, have one somebody who you've really loved as a performer. I mean, look, I'm a Hulk Hogan fan. I feel the pain. I know what it's like to, you know, really enjoy someone, and then you just kind of they're not any good anymore, and that happens sometimes. So I don't really know what they do. I think I hope that because obviously we should mention at this point, Sasha Banks was supposed to be in the Women's Royal Rumble, and she wasn't because she's been injured with a sort of undisclosed injury. But it's been so short term that they've thought every time that she's going to get cleared, and she's not. I mean, to me, get the belt on Sasha, get that SmackDown belt on her. I think she's far more interesting. Let's get a story going with Sasha. And I don't know what you do with Bayley. Maybe Bayley can go back to NXT. Maybe NXT can be, you know, that's where she was great before. Maybe she goes back there. Maybe she can find herself again. Find her smile. Like Shawn Michaels is down there. He lost his smile once. Maybe he can help you find it.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's unfair to state that. I think Sasha has been tarnished by association with Bayley. So I think these two need to split up. And when I say split up, don't split up and ever have a feud, because we don't need to see that ever again. And I would second that suggestion for Bayley to go back down to NXT. She can turn babyface again. It will work there. And there's loads of people that she can compete with that she's never wrestled. And I think she could be very effective there. And it might be seen as a step backwards by some. And maybe it would be financially. But I think in terms of job satisfaction. I think she would get more out of it than she is doing right now. I sense that she's very frustrated with the character. And I think she knows that she's doomed, really, in WWE. Because if she turns face again, okay, it'll be like, ooh, you know, that little nostalgia pop. Whoa, Bayley's back. Oh, isn't that exciting as she's the hugger again? And that, but that'll, what will that last for? 2 weeks, and then it'll be business as usual, and she'll be right back to where she was before she turned heel. So I think in WWE, she's kind of doomed either way. But yeah, I'm with you there. Get that belt off her. Put it on somebody else. Because this is not a stature enhancer for the SmackDown Women's title.
I was talking to Steve Gunn last night, and there's something I would like to see, because I think the Royal Rumble actually exposed that the NXT Women's Division is so much stronger than the main roster Women's Division. And I think that what you need to do is have, you know, there's like three levels of performers right now in the Women's Division and the main roster. There's like the Horsewomen level of performers, and then Shayna would join that, obviously. There's your kind of middle level performers who can do okay, like Nia Jax, Naomi. They're decent enough. And then there's the kind of the bottom level performers, which is like your Lana's,
Tamina,
Lana, Carmella, unfortunately, just fairly basic. And I think that what we need to see is that sort of basic level sort of removed, you know, whether it's send them to NXT or put them in tag teams or whatever. And then the bottom level should be the Naomi, Nia Jax level, that at the very least you're going to get something decent out of these matches. And they're not going to be, because right now it's like we've got five or six people who we're pushing and everybody else is kind of left behind. And the problem that you have with that is then when you bring someone up like a Lacey Evans, you know, Becky can't get a great match out of her, Bayley can't get a great match out of her. And, you know, I don't think Lacey is fully at fault, because I just think she was ready. So I think we need to stop seeing people being brought up too soon. We need to see restructuring in the women's division, because WWE as a whole, as a company, has a lot of female talent. They just need to restructure how they're all positioned, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this, the Women's Royal Rumble, it was almost no flat points. I mean, it was all action, and there was a lot of energy there. And if you think of how it would have been many years ago if they tried this, I mean, it would have just been a disaster. It would have been filled with like veterans that they've had to bring in because they didn't have enough talent to make up the numbers. And it was, I think the overall quality, it was really good. And that's a testament to the overall quality of the talent, as you just stated, Kenny. There are things they could do. There definitely are things they can do to improve it. They've got to kind of try and work out what to do with the talent that aren't really up to that standard and not put them in positions where it's exposed.
So let's move on to the Fiend versus Bray Wyatt. The Fiend versus Bray Wyatt, get a life, Kenny. The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan, sorry, in a strap match for the Universal Championship. They ended up going about 17, 18 minutes, and there was no red light. The story of the match.
Hold on a minute, Kenny. They are two different people.
They're
so hard on yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate. I needed that. I needed that today. I'm feeling too fragile. We got The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan in a strap match. What did you make of the match?
It was. I mean, Bryan took so much punishment in this match to get it over, and he did do in the end. I thought he worked so hard here. I just would like to point out that I still feel shortchanged by Daniel Bryan's babyface turn. When would it have been? SummerSlam time? SummerSlam time when he... Was it the tag team match with... No, it wasn't SummerSlam. It was September, wasn't it? It was when he teamed up with Roman Reigns against...
Was it Hell in a Cell they did that?
Oh, it was Hell in a Cell.
October.
Yeah, so it was... I mean, to me, Daniel Bryan should have remained a heel for longer. I just felt like you had such an incredible character. I know he's done interviews and he said that WWE has told him to stop talking about climate change and stop talking about all these different climate, you know, related issues, because they don't want to do anything to anger Donald Trump, of course. And I just feel like there would have been ways that the heel Daniel Bryan character could have continued and it would have still worked. And I just felt like that babyface turn came from really from out of nowhere. In a sense, he didn't, because it was all connected to the Eric Rowan thing. And then Rowan and Harper teamed up to face Bryan and Roman Reigns, as you said, at Hell in a Cell. But it's like now this babyface character, and it just doesn't really feel like, it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. I don't really feel like that huge bond that people had with him back in 2014 is there. Not even half as much of a connection with the audience as he had 6 years ago. And I think that really had an adverse effect upon the response to this match. And it also felt a little bit like The Fiend was running out of steam, which I don't even want to say that out loud, but it did feel like he was from this match, because those guys beat the hell out of each other, and it wasn't until like the last few minutes that they were getting much of a response. So I was disappointed with the reaction to it, but I mean, probably from what I've just said, that partly explains why fans weren't as quite as into it as they should have been. But I mean, I wanted more from it in terms of response and atmosphere, so it had that real big match feel. Didn't have that until the very end, and I think that hurt the match in terms of how it will be remembered. I don't think it will be remembered as fondly as their 2014 Royal Rumble match.
I think it was a good match. I think their 2014 match obviously is better than the matches they've had in the last couple of months. But I think the test is going to be what the Fiend matches are like going forward when Daniel Bryan's not involved. You know, has Daniel Bryan been able to do enough to help make these matches enjoyable? I mean, did you prefer at least not having the red light?
Yeah. That was a huge improvement. Absolutely, it was. I mean, I noticed when they did the contract signing segment on SmackDown, we had the red light there. It was a good call to drop that for this match. I think had they left the red light on, people wouldn't have seen the strap shots. And I think also they were aware, obviously they were aware of this because it was all laid out, that Bray was going to smack the hell out of Bryan with the belt so he would get all marked up. And no one, that wouldn't have been visible if this had been bathed in red light. So that, I'm sure, was the reason, or part of the reason, why they just went with the normal lighting for this match. You wouldn't have been able to notice all the marks, would you, Kenny, had the red light been on?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I think they did have a decent match, and I liked some of the spots in it, but I think that in terms of a strap match, it was fairly hard-hitting for a strap match, which is good. But have you seen the graphic going around of what The Fiend's going to be doing next at Super Showdown?
No, what's he doing?
The rumour is, from this graphic, that he's going to have a showdown in Saudi Arabia with Kane.
I suppose that does tie in with the angle on SmackDown, not last Friday, the Friday before, doesn't it?
Yes, it does make sense. He has got a history with Kane. I think it's safe to say that Kane's best in-ring days are behind him.
Yes.
But...
it is, yeah. Many years ago. I mean, probably at least 10 years behind him. This is obviously going to be a very financially rewarding match for Kane, which I'm sure is the reason why he's doing it. But I mean, I don't see how this is really gonna get The Fiend over any more than he is already, or make people think better of him as an in-ring performer. I think people are a little bit concerned that maybe there's a lot of illusion here, which of course in pro wrestling, there's lots of illusions in pro wrestling, but we're not supposed to see through them. And with Bray Wyatt, it's starting to feel like, is this guy really the star that we thought he was? And we're kind of seeing through him, and he's starting to look a little bit too much like the guy who was around in 2018.
Well, one of the big issues is if they're going to go with this Roman Reigns Bray Wyatt match, which we assume they're going to do at WrestleMania, I mean, there's no way that audience is going to cheer Roman Reigns over The Fiend.
No, you wouldn't have thought so.
So you're in another position where the idea is probably going to be that Roman is finally the guy to take down The Fiend and beat him, but, I just don't see that going well. I just don't, you know, even on this show when Roman comes out later for the Royal Rumble, he's booed straight away, like I called, Finn, last week. I knew
you
it
did.
Would happen.
Kenny, you were right. You were right.
And, but yeah. No,
you were right.
Just say it one more time for the cheap seats in the back. So, but you know, if you with Roman Reigns, it's a very delicate thing. You do not want to fuck it up again. And they're it's like, they did the right thing because it also came out in the news that Roman Reigns was scheduled to win the Men's Royal Rumble. Thankfully, they saw sense. Maybe they listened to the podcast last week. And I'm sure they did. Vince has got it on his app. But the thing about it is that even though they dodged that bullet, I do think that, you know, when you go to WrestleMania, I mean, you went to WrestleMania in 1999, didn't you?
Like, long time ago.
But when you were there, I'm assuming that in the crowd people loved Mankind and The Rock and Austin, right? Or whoever it was at the time they loved. But I feel like when people go to WrestleMania now, like, one of the main people that people will be going to WrestleMania to see is The Fiend, is to see the entrance, is to see the you know, the monster. And I just don't think they're going to want to see him get beat by Roman Reigns. And I think they're going to reject it. And I think we're going to be back to square one. And it's fairly frustrating because I can see it all taking place before my eyes.
Yeah, it is a dangerous game, and you can sort of see the pieces fall into place, can't you? And is the idea to sabotage The Fiend, flatten him out, so he's not quite so popular when WrestleMania arrives, so people might be more inclined to cheer Roman Reigns? Oh, you know, The Fiend is yesterday's news. He's so 2019. Let's cheer Roman Reigns. Yay! Maybe that's it, Kenny. What do you think?
Maybe. That might be it. But
God. I mean, who else is there that's prepared to face The Fiend at WrestleMania? It really has to be Roman Reigns.
Yeah, because they've separated them as well. They've made sure they've stayed apart. So, I mean, the writing's on the wall.
I mean, you look at SmackDown, I mean, they're not exactly, like, overflowing with top-of-the-line guys, are they? So, I mean, it's got to be Roman Reigns who's facing Bray Wyatt. I mean, maybe... You know, wouldn't it be funny, you know, because Rambling Rabbit's the one who knows the secret. He's the only one who knows how The Fiend can be defeated. Maybe, you know, there could be some sort of Rambling Rabbit and Roman Reigns connection. Maybe that'll get Roman Reigns over as a babyface with the crowd.
I'll take anything apart from the clean Roman Reigns win. Anyway, we'll see how it pans out. But
I thought that is Roman Reigns. You know, he's like so, like, you know, poor faced doing a segment with Ramsey Rabbit. I mean, that would be something to see.
I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. Sign me up. We then got Becky Lynch versus Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. Becky finally getting her win over Asuka by kicking her in the gut. The mist goes everywhere, hits the disarmer. Asuka taps in about 16 and a half minutes. What did you make of this matchup? Because you said in the room, right as this was about to start, you said, right, guys, Becky needs to have a good match here. So she needed
to have a good match. Everyone knew that. So it didn't really sizzle at the beginning. And it was almost feeling like, because The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan, I don't really think had matched most viewers' expectations. I don't know whether that was... advantageous or problematic for Becky Lynch and Asuka, now come to think of it. But it did feel like fans got into this match, certainly in the second half. Didn't really sizzle at the beginning, but it was like a slow match. They put it together. The story, as you said at the end there, with Asuka was about to blow the mist and Becky Lynch like nailed her and the mist goes flying. And then Becky gets the win with the arm, with the what the hell she call her? What's she call?
The disarmer.
The disarmer, of course, the Fujiwara armbar. So I mean, yeah, she scores the win with the submission, and she looked at the end like she was like jubilant at the end with Becky Lynch, and that felt genuine. Like she knew that she'd finally broken her pay-per-view curse of having matches that hadn't lived up to expectations for several months. She'd had like a, you know, run of, you wouldn't really call it bad luck, but a run of matches that disappointed. And this was a match that I think measured up to her standards or expectations. And by the end, the audience was there with her and was viewing her and treating her, reacting to her as a huge star, as the person that her character is, you know, the man, she's the biggest female star in the biz. So it was a good outcome for Becky using the disarmer. It was the right finish. Obviously, she needed this win because we know, I don't think it, I mean, I think they also, the other battle they had to try and overcome was how many people really thought Asuka was going to win this match. And I think that was working against them as well. So there was a lot of obstacles that they had to overcome. And I think they did do that. And I think this was a huge step in the right direction. For like, she'd been going off course and she's now back where she wants to be in the run-up to WrestleMania. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was well done. And the more I think about it, the greater the achievement I think it was, because of the factors that were working against them. I know you've already mentioned that you liked the match, didn't you, Kenny?
Yeah, because obviously Becky had opened Hell in a Cell with Sasha in October that was really good, but it's been a few of those main events that have not clicked, like you mentioned. Like, obviously the one at Survivor Series, the one at TLC, the one at WrestleMania last year. So she needed another really good women's title match, and she got it here with Asuka. Asuka had a great performance. As I said before, what did you make of the Charlotte Asuka match we got the next night? Asuka seemed to get put over strong in some way. She didn't get defeated by tap out. Kairi Sane interfered, so it feels like they are giving Asuka a level of protection. And I mean, I think her performances on those two nights, I just think, you know, she's got to be one of the best in the company.
Yeah, she feels energized again. She feels like somebody who believes in herself and knows the company's behind her, and that must have been very rewarding for her to know that she wasn't going to be beaten by Charlotte after she'd lost to the disarmer. By the way, Fujiwara is different to the disarmer. I just thought I would mention that. Apologize for that blunder there. So, I mean, I think, yeah, Asuka, she's come out of Raw Rumble and Raw much stronger than when she went in it, and as a serious, credible performer again, who can be pushed as a contender to a singles title or somebody who can be tag team. I mean, you just hope that Kairi, when they have that whatever tag team title defense next, you just hope that they're up against a good team and that Kairi has a good night, because she has never, to me, as she seemed comfortable on the main roster, Kenny.
Kairi.
It's just never. I've never once seen her wrestle on the main roster and felt that she's entered the performance that she could. She seems like she's holding something back, and like they've said to her, no, you can't do that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. And I think that is what has happened, because if you go back and look at NXT matches, she did so much more in those matches. You know, they were actual like Japanese style wrestling matches where you would put moves together and into sequences and tell a story that, you know, work on a hold or a body part and then go back to it later in the match, and it would all be part of a larger framework. In WWE, she's someone who does just a few moves. She doesn't really do much in the matches. And I don't think her blows and her kicks have ever really looked good. It's like she's holding back. She's afraid that she might hurt someone. So I think Kairi really needs, hopefully Kairi will look at this and it will be a confidence booster for her. And they can go into, I can't imagine they're going to be wrestling at Super Showdown, but hopefully if they get a match at Elimination Chamber, I'm hoping that they're going to go in there and win or lose, I hope they have like a really good match. And that the pair of them go in there and really perform to the standard that I think they can. But Kairi's never done that yet. And Asuka, as you said, she had a really good Royal Rumble, really good Raw. I'm hoping this is going to lead to more. The only thing is, it kind of feels like she's now peaked, doesn't it? What's she going to do next? She had the match with Becky. It was her turn to put Becky Lynch over after Asuka defeated Lynch at Royal Rumble last year. So she's had that match. She's just had a match with Charlotte on Raw, which was a DQ finish. They had the gimmick match at TLC. What really is next for Kairi and Asuka? That's the only drawback to all this.
Yeah, it's where do you go from there? What team are gonna take them on? I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really done a very good job building up any other female teams as being title worthy, have they?
No, I mean, you got Nikki Cross and Alexa on SmackDown. You could bring back Beth and Natalia for a quick program if you wanted to. But, I mean, when was... Because the last time they defended the titles was TLC, I think. So...
Yes, Kairi was off TV for a long time, wasn't she, after the injury?
Where are the Iconics, by the way?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about that. I was talking to, I think it was Ellie Dean or Jamie, were saying that, well, whatever happened to the Iconics? They weren't even in the Royal Rumble match. Like, you know, last year they won the tag team title at WrestleMania, and fast forward to Royal Rumble the following year, weren't even on the show. Again, you know, they're not a team that I really miss because I don't think they're any good. But yeah, what come down for them?
So the main event of the show was the men's Royal Rumble match. Everybody was wondering if Brock Lesnar was going to last a long time in the match. He ended up lasting over 26 minutes. He eliminated 13 competitors from Elias, Eric Rowan, Robert Roode, John Morrison, Kofi Kingston, Rey Mysterio, Big E, Cesaro, Shelton Benjamin, Shinsuke Nakamura, MVP, Keith Lee, Braun Strowman, and then... In the end, a low blow from Ricochet to get back for last week would cause Drew McIntyre to Claymore kick Lesnar over the top rope. So, but I mean, we'll maybe split the conversation in two halves. What did you make of the Lesnar run in the Rumble, all the different interactions that you had? Did it work for you?
Some of it did. Some of it definitely did. I mean, there was a lot of... There was expendable people that he threw out, like Elias. Really matter about him. He's never going to go any further than this. Eric Rowan. I mean, we still don't know what's in the bag. We still don't know what's in the cage. It's probably going to be a big disappointment. I mean, once that revelation is effected, I think it'll probably be downhill all the way for Eric. So I didn't really mind that he got thrown. Same goes for Robert Roode. The one that I objected to and everyone in the room objected to, from what I could tell, was John Morrison. Lasted, was it about 9 seconds? 10 seconds?
He only lasted like 9-10 seconds.
It's like, on the previous SmackDown, he pinned Kofi Kingston. On the SmackDown before that, he beat Big E. He's just come back. It's like, let him do something. And it's like, as I was saying earlier, there was only Naomi who was able to do any of her acrobatic stunts. So we didn't get anything from John Morrison. I'm sure everyone was expecting that from him. And he could have come out much later. You could have put Miz in that spot. I mean, you know what I mean? You could have put Dolph Ziggler in that spot, Carl Anderson in that spot, Luke Gallows. That's a load of people who could have been there instead of John Morrison. I think Morrison should have been in later at the same time as The Miz, and they should have worked together as a team. And I think that would have worked really well. So that was the one that baffled me. And I know it baffled you as well, Kenny. You were like, what are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, Sondra's suggestion of swapping the positioning of Dolph Ziggler and John Morrison would have been just fine with me. And I got Morrison to get some more stuff.
Kofi Kingston, he had a little bit of revenge. So he was in a lot longer. He was in about just over 5 minutes. So he was allowed to look competitive against Brock Lesnar, but ultimately still wasn't at his level. And it didn't really erase memories of the match from the SmackDown special back in October. The SmackDown, it was the launch episode, wasn't it?
The premiere, yeah.
October 2nd, I think it was. So, I mean, it was like, didn't really erase memories of that. So most of it worked, yeah. I mean, again, your Big E's not somebody, he's going to be a tag team guy. So he's not somebody who's ever going to be credibly pushed as a singles performer, I don't think. Cesaro, I mean, there's no point really complaining about his status anymore. He's been pegged as an enhancement guy. That's his role now until he leaves. Same goes for Shelton Benjamin, Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, who really cares, Kenny? I mean, it's over for him. Why he re-signed? Well, obviously he re-signed for the money and an easy life. But I mean, what a waste of a guy who 4 years ago, you know, even 3 years ago, was a tremendous talent. No, actually 2016, you'd have to go back to, wouldn't you, really, to see Nakamura, his finest, 2016. But I mean, you know Nakamura can do better than this, surely. MVP, I was never really enamored by him, even when he was there full time. He was somebody who, to me, was like emblematic of that era, of a guy who looked good, had a fairly interesting gimmick, but it was really a third match gimmick. Did the gimmick well, but never really progressed as an in-ring performer. And I think that was evidenced further on Raw the next night in his match with Rey Mysterio. If you can't have a good match with Rey Mysterio, you're not going to have a good match with anyone. Is that fair to say, Kenny?
Pretty much, yeah.
MVP, that was fine. Enjoyed the Keith Lee stuff. Thought that was really well done. That was when it all changed. Keith Lee arrived, Braun Strowman. Again, Braun Strowman's expendable now. They've told us too many times. They're not even pretending anymore that Braun can ever be a top of the card champion. You know, this is his role now. He's the monster, but he's in like the Big Show role of, you know, 6-7 years ago. This is as far as Braun Strowman's going. Great to see Ricochet out and get some revenge for what had happened on the previous Raw. And then our boy, or your boy, Kenny, Drew McIntyre turned up. Nails Lesnar with the Claymore. Lesnar sold it like a guy getting paid Lesnar money would sell it. Gets on the outside. And he's just outside for what, about 2 minutes before he even really moved? And some people were saying, well, that was because he was exhausted. Did you see the sweat pouring off him? It's like, no, it wasn't. It was because he was selling it and he was making Drew McIntyre look like a guy who could beat him at WrestleMania. So that was like the turning point of the match for me. To me, most of what we'd seen was good because most of the people that Lesnar had eliminated to me were expendable. There were a few that weren't. I've already pointed them out. But I mean, you know, Drew turned up and it was all leading to that moment, wasn't it? Where Drew eliminated him. And what a story that was. It was beautifully done.
We couldn't quite believe in the room that it was happening. You know, we couldn't quite believe that he actually was going to get to eliminate Brock Lesnar. And, I mean, everybody just went insane for that spot.
They did. They went mad. And I think there was a lot of banging on the wall from your neighbours at that point.
So then we had The Miz, AJ Styles, Dolph Ziggler, Karl Anderson. But number 21, the big surprise of the night, it was Edge making his return after 9 years. And he came in, of course, Kevin Dunn missed the camera angle on the Dolph Ziggler spear, but he came in, he was spearing everybody, he ended up spearing AJ Styles into an injury, which we'll talk about in a little second, but what did you make of the return of Edge and his performance in the Royal Rumble, just in the Rumble?
Well, somebody I know, Kenny, so I'm not mentioning any names, somebody I know predicted this one. And somebody I know was even in touch with somebody who may have reside in a certain state in North Carolina, maybe.
Maybe.
He sort of got the word. And yeah, it was quite a moment, wasn't it, when he came out? And he sort of teased it, hadn't he, that this might happen. He put that picture out, but wasn't it a picture from 2007?
Yes.
Or something like that, of him about to make a comeback.
Yeah, well, he put out a photo a few months ago of him looking absolutely jacked. But, I mean, this must have been interesting for you, because you wrote about his retirement 9 years ago. I think he actually made the cover of Power Slam after that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, to issue 203, I think it was. And I did like a huge sort of three-part career retrospective and got blasted by a lot of people for dedicating so much space to his career. But I thought he'd had such an interesting career that he wanted it. I mean, when I did the interview with him for Patreon, that would have been...
November 2018.
2018. It didn't seem at that point like there was any chance that he was ever coming back. And he seemed really at peace with it as well. I think he stressed that in the interview. You can read that on Patreon. Really good interview. It's still up there, right, Kenny? People can read that.
Yes, they're all up there. You can get the tags that they're under as interview or interviews. So yeah, you can get all the interviews up there. The Edge one is up there from November 2018. It's a belter.
It is, and it seemed like he was at peace with being retired then. It's a surprise in a sense that he's come back. But as everyone was saying at your house on Sunday night, and I'm sure most people listening to this are aware, WWE does take the health of its performers very seriously in 2020. They have to go through a rigorous testing regimen before they're allowed to re-enter the ring. And this is probably why the Hulk Hogan thing will never happen. In fact, it's the sole reason why the Hulk Hogan thing will never happen, because if he can't pass the test, they won't allow him to wrestle. And I don't think he will be able to. But with Edge, if he couldn't do this, he wouldn't be there. He just wouldn't be. And we did have that indication, didn't we, on the... When did he come back and he speared someone, didn't he?
SummerSlam last year in Toronto, he came out and speared Elias.
That's right. So that was a strong indicator that, hold on a second, he's not doing that because, okay, I'm sure the spear, if you do it right, is fairly safe move for the person hitting it, obviously not for the person taking it, as we saw with AJ Styles, if you bump wrong. But you would think it's a fairly safe move if you do it correctly. But obviously, if you don't hit it right, your head and your neck's there, isn't it? So that could be devastating for somebody who'd had two major... I think he's actually ended up having three major neck operations, hasn't he, in total? Because he had the one back in 2000 and... When would it have been? 2003, I think it was, wasn't it? The first one. I think that's right. And then he had the second one in... Was it... When did he have the second neck operation? Then the second one that... Or was that after he retired? Well, he's definitely had two...
He had one... The one in 2003, he had one in 2011 or 2012. Okay, so, and then, obviously, on Raw, he told us that he had another one. I don't know when, but maybe probably 2018, I'd imagine, or early 2019.
Yeah, I think I did hear about that time. Maybe the third operation, I'm sure the third operation was nowhere near as major as the previous two. Of course, he had the first one 2003. Then the second one was after he retired, and that was it. And he'd said, there's no way I'm ever coming back. And I remember reading something online, I think it was, or one of the newsletters, and Edge would be constantly asked, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And he would say, well, I'm never coming back. I can't come back. You know, I've had this major trauma to my neck. If I come back, I could be paralyzed, and fans would just look at him and be disappointed. How dare you? How dare you not wrestle again for my entertainment? And in the end, he's had that other operation. As we mentioned, the segment with Elias, he did the spear. That was, a strong indicator that, an in-ring comeback is a possibility. And I'm sure lots of people were making jokes after that. How long until Edge accepts the gig to wrestle in Saudi Arabia? I'm sure those jokes were made.
I'm sure they're coming.
Well, I'm sure they're coming. I'm sure more of them are coming. But in the end, he's come back at Royal Rumble 2020. Tremendous shape. He's stood opposite Randy Orton, who passed comments on his ripped abs and been in great shape. And there. It's like rated RKO rides again, even though they ended up having the feud, didn't they, in 2010. So that team split up and then they had the mini feud. And you knew someone was turning on the other. And would it be Orton that would turn on Edge? And no, it's Edge who turned on Orton, threw him out of the ring. So that was a nice touch, that Edge, as the grizzled veteran, knowing who and what Randy Orton is, almost probably better than anyone else in the ring on that night, he wouldn't be outfoxed by Randy Orton. So I think that was very fitting that it ended like that, and that it was Edge who eliminated Orton, kind of by double crossing him. So that was fine, and people really enjoyed seeing that. So
we love a smart babyface.
Absolutely, yeah, which is the way all babies. I mean, there's nothing worse than a dumb babyface. It was really good to see him back. Really good to see him back. And I'm glad he didn't win the match. He was not the person who should win it, but he had like a really good outing in there, didn't he?
We should mention, before we get to the kind of the last few entries, we should mention that Matt Riddle came out at 23 and was eliminated by Baron Corbin. And it's come out that basically Matt Riddle has a fair amount of heat in the company. I don't know whether it's because of the Goldberg thing or because of the Lesnar stuff that he's been trying to build, but apparently this was kind of a message to him that he was chucked out fairly quickly to, the idea is that they want to kind of, send him a message that he has to, smarten up his attitude. What did you think of that? What did you think of the idea of them putting him in the Rumble and having him go out so quickly and do you think that, I mean, because WWE have done this before, right? They've sent messages to people before kind of saying, like, you know, what's your attitude by either jobbing them out, or this is not the first time they've done this.
No, no, I don't think it's the first time. well, I mean, hadn't Riddle made some comment online about how he'd said that he was going to be the person to retire Brock Lesnar? Is that genuine, or is that somebody?
He did say that.
Okay, I thought it was genuine. I mean, you've got to remember with Matt Riddle, when he was in UFC, drama just constantly followed him around. He just constantly did. And there was always seemed to be some sort of problem with him. We all know about the Goldberg thing last year, where he was, I think he was actually live tweeting, wasn't he, when during the Goldberg versus Undertaker match, and just taking the piss during the match. So he was absolutely ripping him. And then didn't they come into contact with each other at, was it a major event last year, wasn't it? Was it SummerSlam?
Yeah, it was on one of the backstage specials that Goldberg and Riddle kind of met in the corridor, and it was caught on film.
Yeah, and Riddle actually kind of made light of it, and it was quite funny. I was amused by it, I'm going to say, because Goldberg was a guy who obviously took himself very seriously, and Riddle was almost like in the Scott Hall role on that show as the guy who was taking the piss. And Goldberg just, you know, kept on walking. But as far as, you know, Riddle and Lesnar, I don't know whether that's going to happen. I mean, I have no idea whether that's going to happen. And Lesnar isn't retiring for years.
I mean, if you're getting chucked out by Baron Corbin in the Rumble in 10 seconds, I don't think you're getting a Lesnar match. And that's safe to say, unless his attitude changes. I'm not even saying his attitude was wrong, but I think it's almost, I don't know if this is a Scottish phrase, but like getting too big for your boots seems to be kind of what they're thinking that he's doing.
I think that's fair. I think with Riddle is that he knows he's good. I mean, I think he's an amazing in-ring performer. I really do. I mean, and I think it's a shame, really, that Rob Van Dam isn't around. I think those two would make an incredible tag team, you know, just for a few months. And then Riddle versus Rob Van Dam feud, I think, would be really good. But I think Riddle is such a great athlete. Everything he does, it just looks so amazing. I can understand why people wouldn't like the character. But I mean, I do get the character, and it does amuse me. And I think he's a guy that knows how good he is. But in WWE, when you're really good, you're not allowed, unless you're a top of the card guy, you're not really allowed to tell anyone that you are. So there's that pecking order, isn't there? And there's that whole sort of system where you've got to earn everything. You've almost got to earn the right to brag about how good you are. And Riddle isn't at that point yet where he's earned the right, where he's allowed to say these things. Wouldn't surprise me. I think he's going to be all right in the long term because he is that good, I think. And I think it was inevitable that things like this would happen. And I think there'll be more episodes like this in the career of Matt Riddle before he reaches the big time. And there may very well be more incidents like this that result in him leaving the big time and him going elsewhere. But I think whatever, he's somebody that AEW would definitely sign, and I think he's somebody who would excel there. So I think he probably thinks, you know what, if it doesn't work out here, I've got options. And that's the great thing about the current environment, as we've said many times before, that if it doesn't work out for you in WWE and you've got a lot of talent and you look like a star, you've got options right now. You don't have to suck up to WWE. You know, if you're not happy there, you can go and you can go elsewhere and you can make a good living elsewhere. So I don't know whether this really, some people are probably already predicting the end of Matt Riddle's career and saying, that's it, he's buried himself forever. I don't know. I think he's going to be all right. But I mean, he's somebody that I think needs to learn from this and work out that he needs to temper his attitude backstage and really get into that mode of playing the game if he wants to stay there long term and climb up the ranks, because WWE can be petty, they can be vindictive. We know this, don't we, Kenny?
We absolutely do. They've proven it in the past. So let's go down to the kind of final stretch of the Rumble. We have Randy Orton at 25, Roman Reigns at 26, Kevin Owens 27, Aleister Black 28, Samoa Joe 29, and Seth Rollins at 30. We had sort of Joe and Owens getting eliminated by AOP and Buddy Murphy helping Seth Rollins. We got a lot of kind of big moments with McIntyre throwing Rollins out. We got Roman chucking Edge out. And it came down in the end to Roman and Drew. And Drew chucks out Roman to win the Royal Rumble. What did you make of the kind of final stretch of the match and the different interactions that we had?
Well, I mean, it was kind of overshadowed by the Tartan Army in someone's flat going mad.
I don't know what you mean.
I mean, it was went down pretty well in your flat, didn't it? The finish of this match, Kenny.
I mean, the thing is,
hilarious. Someone said, I think it was Dean who said, "Oh, you know, if Drew goes on to win the title, WWE title from Brock Lesnar, he'll be the first British wrestler to become WWE heavyweight champion." And suddenly, someone piped up and said, "Scottish wrestler, not British."
That was Molly Spartan, who was not willing to share Drew with anybody.
Scottish, not British.
God. Everything has to turn into a bloody independence debate, doesn't it?
But then again, if you go back to Andy Murray, I mean, you know, the fact that he was like, "Oh yeah, we love Andy Murray. He's British." But where is it? Where is Andy Murray from, Kenny?
He is from Scotland.
Exactly.
I mean, it was amazing to see Drew win, a Scottish guy win the Royal Rumble. He's got such a great kind of comeback story that it writes itself, and it's a really good kind of feel-good moment.
It was, and it was, had Roman Reigns won the match, I just dread to think what the response would have been in the venue. I don't think it would have been quite as bad as it had been previously. I think, you know, had he won it, because like it was 2015, wasn't it, when he won the Rumble? That's right, isn't it, Kenny? 2015.
Yes, he had the very good performance in 2014 where people liked him, and he ended up and they were Batista at the end, but then it was 2015 when it all fell apart.
That's it. It was like a role reversal. He was in the Batista role the following year, and people were like, "Where's Daniel Bryan? This should have been his Rumble to win," and like people were going mad. So I think if Roman Reigns had won, the response wouldn't have been anywhere near as. I don't think there would have been as much hostility as there was 5 years ago, but I think it would have really dampened the mood. And it felt like such a bold step forward by WWE to say, yes, Drew's our guy. We're making him Rumble winner. They'd done such a... I don't think we mentioned actually what had happened earlier after Drew had eliminated Lesnar. We should just acknowledge that, shouldn't we? Is that after Drew had... hit the Claymore, Lesnar had flown over the top rope. I mean, what a sell job on that kick. I mean, absolutely beautiful. Then Brock's there at ringside, and they've got the close-up of his face, and he's just like, he's just like the reverse of John Cena, wasn't he? I mean, people were probably waiting for me to take a pop at John Cena, and now's the time for me to do so. And he's just the reverse of how Cena would have done it. Cena would have just laughed. He would have just made a joke out of it like he did. But for Lesnar, it was just serious business, and he was just shocked, and he was just like astounded. I mean, it was all there, conveyed through his emotion and his expressions. And it was just like so well, you know, for all the complaints that there were, and rightly so, about Royal Rumble's production values and the camera work, you go back and you look at that segment, you know, where Drew eliminated Lesnar, the camera angles were perfect. We had the camera there on Drew, stood there looking cool, confident. He's like a guy that's just not, he doesn't sweat Cena at all. Sweat Lesnar at all.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah. Christ, if it was Cena, he'd be in trouble. So he's not bothered about Lesnar. He's not scared of him. He said on Raw the next night, a lot of people in that locker room, they're frightened of Brock Lesnar. I'm not, and I proved it last night. And Lesnar's at ringside, selling it for forever. Looks like distraught by this result. Can't believe it. You know, who's this guy that I might have to wrestle at WrestleMania if he goes on to win the match? It's like, this is a guy who could have my number. And everything about it was just so beautifully done in terms of the execution and the whole way that it was captured on camera. So I think let's give Kevin Dunn credit for that, Kenny, right? I think we should, yeah?
Yes, yeah. He should be given credit for that, even if the Edge thing was deplorable.
Yeah, I mean, this was the biggest story of the night, was Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar. And when McIntyre hit the Claymore, Lesnar went out, and it was as if the match had stopped so we could digest the gravity of what we'd just seen. This was the big story of the entire show, this moment, and the whole way that Lesnar responded to it, the whole way that it was captured by the production team, told me at that moment that Drew McIntyre was winning. So when you said, oh, what was it like, Drew winning? I mean, I wasn't surprised, because I think we kind of predicted that he was going to win on last week's podcast. I don't know whether, I think we had said so, that he was probably going to be Drew. But when this elimination occurred and the whole way it was framed, at that point, there was no doubt in my mind that Drew was going over. So it wasn't a surprise to me at the end of the show. But I mean, it was really good to see, and so nice to see WWE do something different rather than reverting to its default settings and going with the familiar option of a Roman Reigns victory. It's taken a chance, even though he's not a new act, he's never been in this position before. So it kind of feels new. It's a fresh decision by WWE to give Drew McIntyre this spot and this match at WrestleMania. Of course, he confirmed on Raw the next night that he would challenge Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. So I really enjoyed it. Let's face it, it made the show, didn't it? This match and the outcome made the show.
Yeah, it 100% was great. And then we would see on Raw that Drew McIntyre would come out at the beginning of the show and immediately tell us that he is challenging Brock Lesnar for the title at WrestleMania. He's going to Claymore kick him and win the title. He then goes on to beat Gallows and Anderson in a 2-on-1 handicap match. And post-match, Brock Lesnar's had enough. He comes out, he F5s Drew, and the match is now on for Tampa. Drew versus Brock. Is this WrestleMania main event worthy, Finn, is the question.
Also, before we move on from Royal Rumble, Kenny, we need to mention the AJ Styles injury. Just thought,
yes, we'll mention that in just a sec.
Yes, I think it can be. My fear, and I was thinking about this quite a lot earlier today, is that if Drew wins, and I think he will, I just hope he doesn't peak at WrestleMania. I just hope they've got something lined up for him post-WrestleMania that's nearly as good as the Brock Lesnar match. That's what worries me, because we've seen this several times over the years where they have this, and well, we saw it twice last year, actually three times, really. We saw it with Kofi, Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins. We had these really good stories in the run-up to WrestleMania. They win the title and then it's like dropping off a cliff. So that's my fear with Drew, is that I think this can be a big match. I think it can be a big hit on the night. I think Lesnar will do everything. I mean, after what the evidence of the Royal Rumble, I think Lesnar will do everything he can to make this match a success. I hope it doesn't go like 2 minutes. I hope it goes about at least sort of 8 or 9 minutes. I think it should be a real struggle and a real tough match, which, I mean, it's going to be, you know, because that's how Drew likes his matches. He likes them to be tight, likes them to be realistic. He likes them to be snug. You know, he's not somebody who's going to go out there, you know, and soft soapy. He wants the match to look as, you know, realistic as possible in the, you know, context of parameters of pro wrestling. So I think the match should really deliver fireworks. But that's my fear. Who have they got for Drew McIntyre the night after WrestleMania? That's my only concern. But I think between now and WrestleMania, I think he's going to be fine. And I think he'll be fine on the night as well.
AJ Styles, when he took the spear, he took a bump for the spear where he basically flipped over and has separated his shoulder. As of this recording on Tuesday, he is hoped to return in time for WrestleMania, but he is going to be out for a little while to try and get that sorted. So hopefully it's not too serious, but I'm sure he doesn't want to be missing WrestleMania and missing that payday.
I'm sure he's not. I mean, yeah, obviously, I mean, It's unlike AJ, because he was such a precise performer. And I remember doing that interview with him in late 2013. And we were talking about the injuries he'd suffered. I think he'd hardly ever suffered any. And I was just saying, he was kind of like this Chris Jericho type. He was like this Iron Man who just was never injured. And it's very unlike AJ Styles to take a bump like that and hurt himself. Because, I mean, obviously, Edge hit the spear. I mean, Styles has been hit with loads of spears over the years. And he's very much in control of the bump that he took. So it's quite unusual, I think very unusual, really, for AJ to injure himself on what is a fairly routine move. But, I mean, it can happen. Like what I was saying earlier about the spear, when Edge did it last year, things can go wrong on any move. You know, that was the reason why we know that Edge is fit to perform, because there's no way WWE would allow him in the ring if he wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully AJ can kind of recover from that. But I guess we're saving the best till last here in the main podcast to talk about the main event segment of Monday Night Raw, where Edge makes his big return. He cuts a very passionate promo about his journey back into the ring. The fans are going crazy for him. And Randy Orton comes out to seemingly...
But throughout the show, they had screened highlights of Edge's career, you know, from the TLC days, you know, all the various feuds, beating John Cena at New Year's Revolution, and up to and including his 2011 retirement. So they've done a really good job of telling the story of Edge's career in highlight form throughout the program. I just thought I would throw that in there, Kenny.
Yeah, they were definitely trying to hype it up throughout the show to make it a big deal and make it feel like this was the main event of the episode. They'd also, you know, like we've mentioned in this podcast, they had the McIntyre, Lesnar stuff at the start. They had Charlotte saying she's not telling us who she's facing yet, but she had the match with Asuka. And now it was building to this Edge moment where then Randy Orton comes out and wants to get back together with the Rated RKO. And as Edge is kind of considering it, Orton hits him with the RKO, then grabs a chair and starts to smash Edge with the chair. He puts Edge's head into a chair as if he's going to go in the top rope and crush him. Thinks better of it, but then he comes back in the last moments to do a concerto to Edge, one of Edge's old classic moves he used to do with back in the day. It seems that we are on the road to Edge versus Randy Orton. Talk to me about the main event segment, all the elements of it, Edge's return, fan reaction, his story, the Orton stuff. Talk me through all your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I thought Edge was getting choked up there, and you can see it was very emotional for him. He was out there on the mic for a long time, really thanking the fans for giving him all the support that they did, and the fact that he was out there and just put himself through everything for them, and they gave him the support back in kind. And I thought he did really well. He set Randy Orton's appearance up beautifully. And I want to give, you know, huge credit here to Randy Orton. And I thought this was probably one of his best mic performances in a long time. I mean, I know that's not saying a whole lot with Randy Orton, because he kind of usually phones it in. But there was a little bit of emotion there in Randy Orton's voice as well. And that's something you seldom hear from Randy Orton on the mic. And it did feel like, it felt very special. It felt almost sort of real, didn't it? Did you get that feeling? There was a real, very realistic feel to this whole segment. And I think the longer you've been watching wrestling and the more you know about these two characters, I think the greater significance it would have on you. But still, I thought WWE did a really good job building it all up throughout the show with highlights. So even for somebody who just started watching wrestling 3 months ago, I think they would have still understood that this was a special moment. And Randy Orton hitting the RKO, at first I thought, well, why is he doing that? But Edge has eliminated him from the Royal Rumble the previous evening. And we've got plenty of time now for Randy Orton to explain why he did that. And I hope they come up with something really, something potent for Randy Orton to say next time. Because it did seem like a little bit of an overreaction, wouldn't you say, Kenny, what he did?
I mean, ever so slightly. But the thing was, I was watching it today, and like when I was watching what Orton did, I mean, you knew it was coming, right? You knew that it was going to happen. But when Orton did it, you were just going, "You dirty bastard." Do you know what I mean? And I think everybody kind of was invested in it. And somebody had written a tweet about it, actually, which I think was like my favourite tweet about the angle, and it was the reason that it worked was because everybody bought into the angle and everybody loved the hero and hated the villain. And that's when wrestling is good, when you can get people who are behind the good guy and hate the bad guy. And I think that, that really was summed up in this segment. I would go as far as to say this is like an all-time great Raw segment that I think will be replayed. I think it's like up there with like Festival of Friendship type iconic stuff. I mean, obviously it's not as, that was a lot more comedy, but like it was a huge moment, and I think it's going to go down and be remembered as one.
Yeah, almost like, you know, the great face-offs, you know, like Rock and Hogan, you know, those moments that we've had that replayed every year in the WrestleMania highlights video. Yeah, it did feel really big, and you could tell that the audience believed in it as well. And it is annoying. I know when they do this, you're like, will you stop doing that? But it did work in this segment on Raw, where the finding the audience members who are completely engrossed and apparently in disbelief that what is occurring is happening before their very eyes. He's done that. And they're not laughing about it. They're not on the phones filming it. They're not like making a joke out of it and tweeting or whatever, or looking at whatever people look at on the phones at wrestling shows. Just watch the damn show when you're there. Put your phone away. But I mean, all the people are there just were really into it. And they're like, as Orton's on the top, sat on the top rope and pondering, weighing up whether or not to stomp on that chair on the back of Edge's head, people are like, no, don't do it. And people are like, and that was really well done, that segment there with that part of it. Because Orton sat there for a long time considering whether or not he should do this. And no one's laughing. You know, everyone's eyes are there. They're mesmerized by what's happening. And they know that the Edge's neck injury was real. And it's almost miraculous that he's been able to make a comeback. And Orton could take that all away with just one foot stomp on that chair. So it had that sort of tinge of reality to it. And it's blending fantasy with reality. And that's when pro wrestling is at its best, where we can suspend our disbelief. And even though we knew that had Orton done that, he wouldn't really have injured Edge with the stomp to the chair wrapped around his head, we as wrestling fans can allow ourselves to believe that he might have done. And that's where, you know, suspension of disbelief completely takes over, and it's all real when you're in the arena or you're watching it as a fan. So I thought that was really well done. And then he didn't do it, removed the chair, and then came back and, as you say, put the chair underneath Edge's head and hit the chair with the concerto. Just shows you the level of admiration and belief that Adam Copeland has in Randall Orton, that he would allow him to do that move. But there again, if you think about it, Edge did that same move to many other people over the years, and they had to have the same level of trust in him. So it cuts both ways in pro wrestling. Of course it does. But I mean, I think we were talking about this a while ago, the potential of Edge returning. And I think we did mention, didn't we, that Randy Orton Edge was a probable match that they might have.
Yeah, and I 100% was, you know, I don't want to see it, but they've hooked me in, and I think that can happen in wrestling. I always try to be like, I'm going to see it play out, because sometimes you can think something's going to be terrible and it's great, and then the other way around. But I mean, to me, Edge and Randy Orton, if they play it right, could have so much heat. I mean, I saw a tweet from somebody, I think it was Wrestle Features, who said, "Have Orton show up in NXT and punt Beth Phoenix. I dare you." And I mean, they might not go that far, but you know, there's so many things they could do. I just think there's so many possibilities to it that I'm really in. And I'd never thought that an Edge and Randy Orton match would be something I'd want to see, but they hooked me with this segment.
I was concerned about, because Orton, it seems like he only recently turned babyface. And to me, Edge is a much better heel than Orton ever was. So I was not on board with Edge being the babyface and Orton being the heel. But this was so well done that now I'm on board with it. This works. But I think in terms of where they go from here, in terms of promoting it, WWE in the past, when it has come to promoting WrestleMania matches, sometimes the more WWE does, the less interested you are in the match. So I would caution against doing too many angles and promos or face-to-faces after this, I think they only need to do a couple. I think Edge needs to go away for a long time. I think the next time we need to see him is maybe in 3 weeks, wearing a neck brace. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to wrestle again, blah, blah, blah. And I went through all this to come back and you just ruined it. Almost a little bit like the, you know, Ric Flair, Terry Funk thing in the run-up to the Great American Bash 1989, where Flair sold the neck injury. And it's, I think they almost need to sort of revisit that. And maybe write the story along the lines of, will the match even happen? You know, Edge may not receive clearance to ever wrestle again after what Randy Orton did. So I think they really need to play that part up rather than overdoing it on confrontations and brawls and face-to-face promos and all this other stuff, which many times in the past, anyone who's been watching WWE for a length of time knows this is true. Sometimes we overdo it and you're just like, my God, I don't really want to see the match. I've seen too much of them already. I think they really need to go down that road of, can Edge even come back? Can he wrestle again after what Randy Orton did to him on the post-Royal Rumble Raw?
You know, it's funny, we were talking last week on the podcast about what we wanted out of the Royal Rumble, and we just wanted to feel excited about some stuff, and I feel like they did set up enough stuff in the Royal Rumble that I feel like, you know, when I was watching Raw as well, I feel like we are starting to get into WrestleMania season, and I'm just glad that we're here talking this way and not sitting kind of monumentally disappointed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a lot more to come. I think there's a lot more surprises. I mean, we don't really know. I mean, how many matches are we aware of? We know it's going to be Brock Lesnar versus Drew McIntyre. We're pretty sure, well, it's obviously going to be Edge versus Randy Orton. We know that. We mentioned the women's matches earlier. What other matches do we think might happen at WrestleMania, Kenny?
So I think as far as we're aware, we think it's McIntyre, Lesnar, Reigns and Wyatt, we think is going to happen. Becky, Shayna, we think. Charlotte, Rhea, say that is going to happen, maybe. And Edge and Orton, that's five. So five matches. You've got to assume there's maybe another seven or eight going to happen. I don't know what they're going to be. But there's probably going to be more titles on the line. I mean, my ideal scenario would be that we just don't have these bloody battle royals and all that. But I'm sure we're going to. But you know, the top end of the card is looking pretty good. There's some fresh stuff in there. There's new people getting pushed. So there's gonna be a lot more though, I'm sure, between now and then for us to talk about and think about. But I'm excited to talk about it, which is a good place to be.
Of course it is. Who do you think is going to be on the opposite side of the ring to Triple H for 25 minutes?
I'm going to make a bold prediction. I don't think Triple H will wrestle at WrestleMania this year.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to happen because normally when he does, it's set up in advance, hasn't it? It's been set up by now and nothing has happened this year. The only thing I would like to see is if he was going to have a match, I'd like to see him wrestle someone from NXT and to put them over. That's what I'd like to see.
Well, that is it for us. We've gone very long here in the main podcast, but we hope you guys have enjoyed it. As I've said before, please do give us a 5-star review on wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Google Play, whatever. It helps us to be able to, you know, get higher up the ranks. Finn, what are your plugs for this week?
You can follow me on Twitter at Finlay Martin. Website's finlaymartin.co.uk. I think that's about it. My Facebook's at Finlay Martin. I put more stuff on Facebook than on Twitter, so you can keep up with me there if you choose. And what are your plugs, Kenny?
I'm just going to give you a couple of plugs today. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes, which is obviously where you can get all of our interview content. We've got a great Cody Rhodes Royal Rumble story up from 2008 when he... involving The Undertaker, which is great. And also patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, which is where you can get these shows 24 hours early. This show 24 hours early. You also get an overrun with me and Finn. Retro shows, pay-per-view reviews, articles by Finn, interviews. You can go and read that Edge interview from back in November 2018. And other interviews with people like Jim Ross, Cody Rhodes, Dustin Rhodes, Bret Hart, loads of people. So there's loads of stuff up there as well. And finally, insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets. tickets if you want to come see JR and Conrad Thompson, which will be taking place next weekend. Friday in London, Saturday afternoon in Manchester, and Sunday afternoon in Glasgow. We hope you'll make it along with us and check out these shows. These should be a ton of fun. And then Kenny Omega in April. So that's where you can get your tickets. So Finn, I look forward to catching up with you for the Overrun.
Absolutely, yeah. We will be recording that in a moment.
And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for all your support, everybody. And have a good week. If I am sad tonight.